Shalom aleichem, chaver. This is the National Council of Young Israel. We welcome the Rabbanim. We welcome Rebbe for conference call number 129. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one, can an Ashkenazi kasher a glass stove for Pesach? There are more rights in Siman Tov Nun Aleph, Sivcha Vov, that Hagolah does not work for glass. He writes in Siv Dalet, Chatzuva Tzorech Libun. Chatzuva is defined by the Mishnah as a tripod, a grate, which requires Libun. It's obviously impossible to be Malabin, to put a torch to the glass top. But the Mishnah Berurah writes in Sivkot and Lamedalet that Medina, strictly speaking, there's no need to really kasher the great. Why not? Because Ein Bulua Yotzi Mikli L'Kli B'la Rotev, something which is absorbed in a pot, will not leave the pot and get into another pot without Rotev, without a liquid medium. How much of a liquid medium is required? That's a dispute. According to the Chavos Das, a puddle is needed, not just a little bit of liquid. The Yad Yehuda is a little more strict, even any liquid, but without any liquid at all, no problem, strictly speaking. As a result, it seems to me, since it's not required strictly speaking, it's enough that we call in our language a libun kal. What's a libun kal? A libun kal means you put it to the highest. You put it to the highest and try very hard, nothing will spill over on Pesach. If there's no puddle, you can rely upon the Chavos Das. If you look in the Piskei Tshuvos, footnote 354, causes a dispute whether putting it to the highest works. And that's why I recommend everybody a different trick. Ideally, get a different glass cover for Pesach. And when it first came out, had a Talmud, I said, could you buy another one just for Pesach? He said, yes. And he apparently puts it in every year for Pesach, for that week, and then takes it out, puts the regular one back. I'm told it's not so logistically simple anymore, or maybe it never was that simple. So then I recommend a little round item which lifts the pot off the glass a little bit. To cover the whole glass with tin foil, I'm told, is going to break the glass. That's not good. But if you put a little, some call it a trivet, some call it a little cylinder, a little round item, which lifts the pot off the glass a quarter of an inch, that's more than enough, and at the same time, because it's so close to the glass, it can heat up and cook up the same as if it was touching the glass, just about. That's my highest recommendation for this type of situation. Question number two, koshering a stainless steel microwave for Pesach. Well, microwaves have a whole different parsha. They if they absorb anything, it's what we call in our language zeah. Zeah means steam. And the poskim assume the famous rule, kibolo kachpolto, if it goes in with steam, if it goes out with steam. So you first have to clean it very well. Then you take a cup of water, fill it, and put on for the long period of time that the whole place steams up. And then take a cup empty. It should be almost empty by then if it evaporates, so even better. In any event, you fill it up again, put it in a different place. Don't put it in the same place. So the issue was that the area on the floor under the cup is not experiencing any steam. Put it in a different place and do it again. It has an advantage of doing things twice, tov mashnayim and echad. In this fashion, one can kasher a stainless steel microwave for Pesach. Question three. In cleaning for Pesach, is one required to clean crumbs? Does it make a difference what state these crumbs are in? The Sharatzian, Simitov, Lamed Gimel, Sifkot, Lamed Gimel, he says that they're memela batli. They're batli by themselves. There's no need to check after them. In the Dirishu there, footnote 20, some disagree. He refers to the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tov Mem Beis Sifkot Lamed Gimel. If it's metuna of ktas, it's a little dirty. Everyone agrees. There's no need to destroy them. And he writes in some tough Mem Dalet of Kon Tezvav, Nidrasim Biraglayim Umisbaran Me'aleyim. So therefore, if there are crumbs on the floor, there's no need to check for them, no need to remove them, because on the floor there's, by definition, dirty. There's no problem whatsoever cleaning crumbs, which presumably are on the floor. I'm not discussing crumbs that like come to the table. That's a whole different story. But crumbs on the floor, in the B'dikas Chametz, not a simple level. You're looking for a kazayas, admittedly a small kazayas, but still a kazayas, and less than that is considered to be automatically bustle if it's on the floor. It's dirty, people step over them. This is important. We should not confuse Pesach cleaning with spring cleaning. Rabbi Scheinberg has a whole piece about this, that the women complain, they work so hard. They don't have to work so hard. You look for a kazayas, that's it. And it's not spring cleaning. And women are obligated to feel simchas yomtiv. They shouldn't come at the Pesach all exhausted. That's an important thing to keep in mind. Question 4. Are chewables dash liquid medications acceptable for Pesach? To make a difference if it is for a child and the age of the child, does it make a difference if it tastes good? The Mishnah Berurah writes in Siman Tov Mem Beis of Karton Chaf Aleph that it may be prohibited, even though it's not what's called machal odom, not edible, because of achshavei. The fact that you're eating something makes it important. Dirshu 42 says we do not apply this svara to medicines. The Shakar Sari says we do, but many gedolim, the Yad Yehuda, the Ksav Sofer, Igros Moshe, Mincha Shlomo, you don't apply achshavei to medicines in general, especially as the Chazon Ish writes, if the actual medicinal ingredient is not chametz, it's just a pill which is put together with starch, comes from wheat, so therefore, you don't care about that really. So even according to the Shakas Aryeh, maybe there wouldn't be an achshavei in that kind of situation. It's just holding things together. And therefore, it'd be enough to be nifsal me'achilas adam. Usually, if it's nifsal me'achilas adam, it's prohibited, because it's royal lechamei ha'isas acheros, certain types of dough, sourdough, but not this. So therefore, the bottom line is that it's permissible. What if it's sweet? So there, if you look in Dirshu, Tov Samach Vav, footnote 4, he calls a machlokes if it's sweet. The chametz is not sweet. It's sweet to cover up the bad taste of the medicine. So he quotes from Shlomo Zalman, said it's okay. Rav Nissen Karmelin said it's not okay. So if it's sweet, of course, it's better to avoid if you possibly can, just to make l'chol adeis, especially if it's a situation where you can't find a substitute, which is not sweet. Like some of these cough medicines, which have these problems, they come in two ways, flavored and unflavored. So all year long, we like the cherry flavor, very good. But on Pesach, it's better to use the unflavored and hope that the patient will be able to handle it, especially a child, hopefully be able to handle it. Number 5, does melatonin in pill form require Pesach certification? Presumably, the individual who's taking it needs it to sleep. This lack of this pill would affect their functionality. That's very good. Functionality is a good way to say you can't function normally. That puts him into the category of a chola she'ein bo sakana. And a chola she'ein bo sakana may take medicines, even though they may contain some chametz. These pills are not considered to be an achila. It's not considered royal achila, as we said earlier. So happened, I looked it up. I got this in the mail a couple of days ago, the beautiful list of medicines from the Kola Los Angeles. And there it says, lo and behold, that this type of medicine, the 3-gram dosage, is kosher lePesach, melatonin. So that problem is solved quite readily. Question 6. A question that arises each year is that for those who use Miralax to aid with their digestion, especially important for Pesach, this product does not usually make an appearance on the Pesach list. It is generally added to a drink and consumed in that manner. Is it permissible on Pesach? Well, guess what? I looked in the same list from L.A., my wonderful colleague of Rabbi Gershon Vest Shlita. And there he says that this particular thing called Myrelax, which is made by the company called Bayer, a very famous pharmaceutical company, is kosher lePesach. If it's a different brand or a different situation, then it'll depend on whether the lack of the medicine will cause an individual to be unable to function normally. So we're matter these things, otherwise not. Question 7. Someone ordered $25,000 of scotch from overseas. Delivery can take weeks for it to arrive. If it's delivered on Pesach, may he put it together with the chametz he sold to the Gentile? Or do we say that since before Pesach it wasn't his yet, because it is a davar shkinyan shelo b'le'olam, shelo b'davar mesuyam, it wasn't included in the mechiras chametz, and therefore he must forfeit the $25,000 of liquor that he purchased. I'm not sure if it's a davar shelo mesuyam, if it was already packaged and sent on its way to his house from overseas, it's mesuyam, all right, but who owns it? Who owns it is a big question. My understanding is that until it's delivered, he doesn't own it. It's still owned by the company from which he bought it. He wish he bought it, and therefore he can't sell it for a different reason. It's a davar shana shalom. Like it's considered like a davar shalom b'le'ola. If they bring it to his house on Pesach, no! Should refuse delivery. If they put it down on his property, he should say, I don't want any part of it. I don't want a part of it. And he should, there are Moses and some tough members of base, got to put a kli on top of it, Cholamayit put a mechitz in front of it, Shulchan Aruch Weiss and Simon Tov Mem Chesed Beis, Mishnah Berurah of Katan Vav, should say explicitly, verbally, orally, I don't want to take possession of this chametz. Even though the Mishnah Berurah Weiss and Simon Tov Mem Chesed Beis, that he doesn't have to say it explicitly, but in this case it's much better if he says it explicitly. Why? If you look at there in the Chok Yaakov, they're in Simon Tov Mem Chesed Beis, if they sell it to you, or they're trying to sell it to you, it's worse, because there's a possibility that you have some measure of responsibility. We call that achrayus. And therefore, you certainly must say you're not mekabel it at all. You're not mekabel achrayus. You don't want to accept ownership or responsibility. No need to throw out the scotch afterwards. I'm against drinking scotch in general, if you know that. So maybe you shouldn't order it at all. Oil. And some people say that most of the scotch in this country is also because it's Chomash Shavuot of a Pesach from some previous year. Another reason to avoid these kinds of drinks. Number 8. May someone purchase Chomash and Chol HaMoed from Amazon that will arrive after Pesach, being that there's a compelling basis in Halacha that one doesn't take ownership until he receives the item. I agree with that last part, but nonetheless, I think it's Usser. Why? It's rosa b'kiyumo. You want the chametz to exist, so you should be able to get it after Pesach. You want it. Rosa b'kiyumo is a serious question. If you look in the Pesachei Tshuvos and Siman Tov Nun, footnote 75, he says, you know, the reason why when we sell our chametz to a guy before Pesach, even though most of us could be called rosa b'kiyumo, we'd rather have the chametz to be able to buy it back when Pesach is over rather than have it disappear and collect the money from the guy. Nonetheless, since we don't do any action on Pesach, we are totally passive, that's why it's considered to be permissible. But if a person is active, buying on Chol HaMoed, that's a road to the human problem, so certainly it should not be done. Question number 9. Can one kasher a hot water with plastic spout by filling it up with water and turning it on until the urn reaches 108 degrees, not 212 degrees? I believe the answer is yes. There's a principle again of kibolo kach polto. Primogodim speaks about it in Siman Mishpatel Zov, Siman Tov Nun Aleph of Cotton Tess. The Pesachei Tshuvos quotes in footnote 77 from no less an authority than the Ra'ar, Rav Aharon Halevi, in his Bedek Abayis, by his Beis Shar Dalet, says so. And it's relevant, of course, in factories where the precise temperature is recorded and it sometimes never goes over 180, for example, so you can kasha with 180, 150, 150, whatever it is, kibol or kachpol. So normally we don't say that, because normally we have no idea how hot it gets. Could be hot, it gets as hot as 212 degrees, so we require 212 degrees. He's talking about an urn. My assumption of the questioner is working with is that it never gets above 180. So if it never gets above 180, we have the right to apply the principle of kibolo kachpolto. And therefore, if it's 180 degrees and never went in more than that, then it's possible to kasher it with that level of heated water. Okay. Now, question number 10. Glass is used for cold whiskey. Do they require kashering for Pesach if only used for cold and when washed in the sink where there was always soap? The questioners assume that they require kashering. Could be a kashering won't even help. Could be a kashering won't help. Why should it help? It's talking about glass. We generally assume Ashkenazim that glass, we do not kasher. Pashtus, even if it's used for cold. Not everyone agrees to that, but that's a simple shot. So, number one is glass. Number two, it's whiskey. Look at Mr. Ruasif Cotton, Kuf Chof, which whiskey gives a very strong taste. Look at Ramosha's Shuva, Arachayim's Kelek Aleph Simon Kuf Nun Aleph. So I believe that it should not be kashered at all. The question was to require kashering, as opposed to, maybe according to Sfardim, it would be good without kashering. But according to Ashkenazim, one should not use it at all. 11, we discussed before, liquid medicine and vitamins that require Pesach certification, we can say they are considered Ein Ro'eh L'Achila. We assume that it is considered Ein Ro'eh L'Achila. We'll discuss in the next question in detail. And therefore, it's permitted for a chola she'ein bo sakana. I have to tell you that vitamins are usually used for healthy people. So the heter chola she'ein bo sakana would not be effective unless the doctor overrules me. You should just skip the vitamins if it has chametz. You don't need the vitamins every day. My doctor tells you vitamins, except for vitamin D, are useless. But that's a medical question. So skip it for Pesach unless you have an explicit doctor's order to the contrary. Question number 12. Perfumes, liquid deodorant, and vapes that are from Italy to contain chametz, can we allow them on Pesach being it is Ein Ro'eh L'Achila's Caliph? And say the average person doesn't know how to extract the chametz from the bottle unless he's a chemist. I remember my Rebbe Rabban Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, who had problems with liquid chametz. He saw people ingest it. You know, the drunkards would ingest this stuff even with the disc, even though it was denatured. But obviously the question doesn't go with that. He's worried about being able to distill it, to boil it and get rid of the other impurities and bring it back to pure alcohol and drink it as such. That is a question. So let me analyze one at a time. Vapes are also all year long. I will not discuss that. It's 365 days of the year. Now, perfumes and liquid deodorant, on the other hand, strictly speaking, should be okay. It's nifsal me'achila. Some say that we should be strict because there's a way to extract it or drunkards drink it. Now, I look in that same guide from the L.A. Kollel. They have so many types of liquid deodorants and even more types of liquid perfumes. Why is there a need to have one which has chametz? There's so many. I think, even though it's probably mutter mikir adin, I would recommend they should get one which is kosher to Pesach, since there are so many to choose from. Question number 13. I lead a seder for mainly elderly people who eat very little of the matzah and wine. What is the smallest amount they need to have to fulfill the mitzvah? It's a very good question. It seems to me that the real kazayas, the real average kazayas today, is quite small. I would say it's about approximately 7.5 cc, which is approximately 1/15 of your average hand matzah, obviously they were thicker and thinner. This year there's no shots of matzahs, so those are the thicker coins. But still, you have the Ayus Salem Papa, which is sort of average, and it's approximately 1/15 of a matzah is the size of today's aleph. That's not that much. If the person can't have that much, have a little bit less, and that should be sufficient in a shas hatzchak, someone who has trouble eating more than that. Comes to wine, the shear is a row of revias. Revias, strictly speaking, is only 2.5 ounces. A little more than 1.25 ounces, it shouldn't be too hard. That's enough of a shear for someone who is unable to have any more than that. 14. Can a non-married Baal Tefillah daven Tefillas Tal for the Amud? Is there a hierarchy of who should be called on to lead services and daven Tefillas Tal? Strictly speaking, anyone can daven Tal, even if you're not married. Not a problem, as long as you're Merutz of the call. Very often, the Baal Tefillah for Shon Yom Kippur is also called upon to be the Baal Tefillah for Tal and for Geshem, which is a good idea. He knows Nusach. And even if he's unmarried, he can still be a Baal Tefillah, even Yom Naroim, but certainly for Tal. He should be Merutz of the call. People should like him, should want him, should like the way he davens for the Amud. That's the most important criterion in any Baal Tefillah. And here as well, that this is the normal way to get the Baal Tefillah daven Yom Naroim, should daven Tal and Geshem. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's often the case. Question 15. The Sunshine Protection Act, passed unanimously by the Senate in March 2022, would enact daylight savings time permanently. Clocks would indefinitely be 1 hour ahead of the sun. Is this a subject that should be spoken from the public? Should we organize and be speaking with our local politicians? My latest information is that this act was tabled. I read some congratulatory messages sent by various Torah True organizations thanking the people for taking it out because it gets light much too late. They're also concerned, of course, about little children going on their school bus when it's pitch black, which is why the present system is very, very good. It balances pretty well, certainly for us who live in the New York area. It's very good. It has many advantages. So I don't think it's necessarily a need to speak out about it politically. I think it's no longer an active bill. If it turns out to be an active bill, so then people should, you know, the pulpit, you need the politicians. The pulpit's not going to help you over here. So if you have someone of those local politicians, they should be encouraged to make sure this bill does not pass. Question 16. What are the parameters for a woman in her year of Avelos to say Kaddish with a minyan? In my shul, the woman has no brothers to say it, and her father has passed on. So the Pesachei Tshuva, Shinayin Vav in Yerodeah, he says the minyan was never for a woman to say Kaddish, and he should not be allowed to do it because it weakens the minhagim. When I grew up, I never heard a woman saying Kaddish. It was unheard of. And sadly, there was very then also times of people who passed away with no sons and had a daughter. Didn't matter. The daughter wouldn't say, it was unthinkable. The daughter wouldn't say Kaddish. Either her husband would say Kaddish, the son-in-law, if he's able to do so because he doesn't have both parents. That's our custom, not to say Kaddish if you have both parents. Or if not the son-in-law, they would a different relative, or they pay someone to say Kaddish. That was the minhag for many, many, many years. Recently, they started this thing about women saying Kaddish. It's against the minhagim of old, and besides that, it's not unrelated to the general push, which is called feminism, which is in many other areas, not this area, in other areas, is problematic from the halachic perspective. And therefore, the rabbi should discourage it. If a woman wants to say it while others are saying it, she'll say it in an undertone. So I don't think the rabbi should make a fuss about that, because by saying it in an undertone, the woman recognizes that's not the meaning of the shul. Just she wants to say it. So we're not going to stop her. If she says it in a loud voice, we're not going to take her down with a karate chop. I don't think we should do that. We should say the policy of the shul is that women do not say Kaddish, certainly not in a loud voice. If a woman should say it in a loud voice against the shul's policy, so the proper thing to do is to have a man say Kaddish at the same time, and then the tzibur can ask for the man's Kaddish. Again, if that's, you know, if that happens, it's better that it should not happen in places such as my shul where it's not, this is not part of our shul policy. Women do not say Kaddish. We've had women who said it in an undertone, which we respected. They say it out loud, we just don't approve. We can't stop it. We're not going to do anything about it, but it does not conform to the policy of our shul, and I think there are many other shuls that have the policies such as mine. Other shuls have different policies, so we love all Jews. We're not here to say that it's the worst thing in the world, but it's against the Minhag Yisrael as existed for centuries, I would say, and therefore it should not be encouraged, particularly given the link that it does have to feminism if one just observes the scene. Question number 17. Is it okay to make a kiddush for a daughter during the year of Avelis for a father? Is it okay to make a kiddush for an adopted daughter during the year of Avelis for a father? Then it's the same in both. It's permissible. It's considered to be a simcha, and therefore a kiddush is in fact in order. It's an appropriate thing to do to make a kiddush. The Avelis is a problem. Generally speaking, I tell people who are on Avelis and they're invited to various simchas that not to go to weddings of Sheva Brochusin as a rule. That's real, real halachic simcha. But everything in between, such as the Kiddush, such as the Shalom Zocher, or a Bris, or a Pinyon Aben, things of this nature, if you have to go, if you feel you must go, just don't eat anything. Zero. Eat it at home before you go. According to the Rishonim, if you don't eat anything, it's much less of a simcha. There's more room to be lenient. So I'd recommend to this individual who wants to make a kiddush, yivyos for a father, that the individual should make the kiddush for the members of the shul, but that individual, him or herself, should not partake of that kiddush. And when everyone leaves, you still leftovers and have it for your Suda Shabbos. Next question. 18. Can a chas and kal take couples pictures before the chuppah? Can they hold hands? So here's the story. I strongly encourage couples to take the non-touching pictures before the chuppah. In the alternative, if they don't, it delays the wedding terribly. You go to weddings these days, they don't come in the chuppah until an hour and a half after he put his foot down and broke the glass. I kid you not, I don't exaggerate. To be an hour and a half later, all the pictures and this and that, the other thing. It's a tremendous tircha de tzibura. Remember once I was at a wedding with the late Rav Shneur Kotler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. It's one of those weddings. He said to me, who gives them the right to waste so much time of the people? All the man hours down the drain. And the bleary eyes the next morning, people can't get up to Minyan, can't go to work because it goes so late. All because of the photographer. So the proper thing, in my opinion, is to take the pictures beforehand. But it takes away some of the romance of the Badekin. They didn't see each other for a week. So you have your romance an hour before the Badekin when you take the pictures. But the touching pictures, I do not approve. Touching pictures take place after the chuppah. But those are so few. Those are so few that by the time they get out of the yichud and finish those touching pictures, they come out right away. They have just finished the first course or courses, and they don't cost any time to the tzibur. Everyone will bless you for ending the wedding at an earlier time. It saves up from a half an hour to an hour. I kid you not, by taking all the other pictures beforehand with the chas and kal in the same picture. Between you and me, if they refuse for whatever reason, I would eliminate those pictures completely, and just Photoshop, crop the picture of the chosn, leave a space, and it'll put his picture in with the Kala's family and vice versa. to limit the pictures after to the touching of pictures, which don't take too much time. Question number 19. A maid that we consider a kablan wants to iron clothing or to do other malachas that she technically she can do after Shabbos. She does it on Shabbos to save time for herself on Sunday. In order for this to be permitted, does the homeowner need to make a condition upon hiring that she doesn't need to do these malachas on Shabbos? Or the fact that the job is not necessary for it to be done on Shabbos itself allows the maid to do it? Not so simple that it's mutter under any conditions. To look at Shulchan Aruch and our Chaim Tzimin Reish Nun Beis Siv Beis and the Mishnah Berurah Siv Kod Nun Zayin, it sounds that it's not allowed at all. Why is it not allowed? He didn't say to do it on Shabbos. She's doing it for her own convenience. That's to be around on Sunday. It doesn't matter. It's what we call a chashad. People will suspect that the balabas told the individual, the maid, as it's called in this question, to do it on Shabbos. And therefore, it really should not be done at all. Much protest against it. No, if she does it against a protest, there's no Easter on Motzei Shabbos. Not the same as other malachas, which we have a mesorah to being lenient, even if it's in the house of the Jew with the vessel of the Jew, which the Shulchan Aruch seems to disallow in Reish Nun Beis Beis. So I believe that the Shulchan Aruch is referring to types of malachas which you typically would hire someone to do for you. This would include ironing clothes. It would not include things that typically a non-Jew in the house does. They wash dishes or they clean up the house. Things of this nature, even if they would be involved in the malacha, would not be something that if you're going to, usually, people are not hired to do these things. But ironing clothing is very often done by a hired hand, and that's why it's worse. Again, there may be others who are more lenient, but it seems to me that you should protest, not let her iron the shirts on Shabbos. Well, she says, of course, the time on Sunday, so you try to make an accommodation to give her free time on Sunday and find a different time for the iron the shirts, not on Shabbos and not on Sunday. 20, they went training for the U.S. Army after training in the United States Chil Shabbos. On a simple level, the answer is no. We're not discussing World War II. When we had to go fight against the Nazis and Mach Shema wanted to kill all the Jews. We're talking about what's fundamentally called peacetime. Now we're standing the saber rattling in the Ukraine, etc. It's called peacetime. And there's no urgent need. So I don't see a head to Michal Shabbos. Question number 21. How concerned should we be about shidduchim between a boy and a girl who has the same name as his mother? Is there a need to change her name before they get married? This is a chumrah of Tzavar Rabbi Nehuda Chosid. Many poskim say it only applies to his progeny. Some say it doesn't apply at all. Some say all kinds of some says. So therefore, on that basis, the answer is like this. Man de kopet kapdinle, the Gemara says. There's certain voodoo stuff that someone who worries about it should worry about it because it's going to come back to haunt him. But someone who doesn't care about it doesn't have to worry about it. So that's the answer I can give you. If you don't care about it, just forget about it. If it really is of concern, then you can either, find a different shidduch or add another name, whatever the requirement is in that particular part of the world. Question number 22. I found myself celebrating a bar mitzvah of a Talmud in a hotel with electronic locks. Magnets were provided to place over the strike plate where the door bolt goes in, so the door remained open. May I take it off and close the door and go to sleep for the night? And may I put it back on Shabbos morning when leaving the room? Is there a problem if there is a light that goes on outside of the room when the door is closed or opened? Very serious question. Very serious question. My understanding is that when you remove the magnet and lock the door, there was an electric circuit being completed. We don't like to do that. What the nature of the issue is, I can't tell you. Some say it's the Raisa, Chazanish, it's Bono, it's Makabapatish. Others say it's fundamentally mutter, it's asa b'drabanan, of the dechol, all kinds of molded, all kinds of different answers. Bottom line is, we have a custom, we don't put on electric appliances on Shabbos. We don't complete electrical circuits on Shabbos, and therefore it's a serious problem if my facts are correct, and that's what's happened. Now, if there's a situation which for some reason the only issue is the light that's described in the second half of the question, the light that goes on outside the room, doors closed or open, that's usually number one, an LED light, which is derabbanan. In most cases, I believe, it's a psik reish lo nichole. I don't believe the person in the room cares one way or the other about the light, to my knowledge. Why it's there, I'm not 100% sure. If it's psik reish lo nichole by derabbanan, as we discussed in previous shiurim, both Rabbi Avadja in many places, and even Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in one place, Nicholas Moshe, say it's okay. I explained to you, I think, why it's okay. Psik reish lo nichole, some say it's always mutter, and some say psik reish by the Rabbonis is always mutter, and we accept the combination thereof. If those who recall the shir, one, the fakas lo nichole takes away the possibility of mechave, and the fact that the Rabbonon takes it out of the category of what we call Masa Echot Chad Maisa, which is the other step of the Chakira, Bochonot Chakira and Ksubis, I believe Simon Yudches. So that would be permissible in those circumstances. The light itself is not the biggest problem, but the electricity, which goes on or off when you open and close the door, either, you know, having it go into the bolt or not, magnet, no magnet, that's something which you really do want, and maybe even worse than segregation, maybe it's in a machav and mamish, so therefore it should not be done in such a circumstance. Question number 23. Someone told me that there are shittas that prohibit carrying in a hotel and that an eruv must be made. Is it true? Do we pass like that? Is a distinction between inside the hotel building proper and the hotel grounds? Does it depend if the grounds are gated or not? Well, if the grounds are gated, that's a prerequisite to carry outside. In the building is surrounded by the building, with the walls of the building. You have to have four mechitzas, that's for sure. But it's a takonis erev chatzeris. Even if you have four mechitzas, the total which is a yachid, the Chazal said, if more than one person lives there, it's a problem. And if the non-Jews who live there or non-Shomer Shabbos who's living there, it's also even a bigger problem. You have to what's called Schirat Rishus. So it's a major problem to try to do an Erev Chateres every single Shabbos in a hotel. It's a problem. Many poskim are lenient. What's the heter? Well, if everyone eats in the same dining room, that's for sure okay. That doesn't always happen, even if there's a family simcha. Could be that there's some people who have hired it privately, that's who bought out the whole hotel, and they're eating by themselves in their room or in a different dining room. Not so simple that that is going to work in many of these cases of hotels. That's a problem. So what are you left with? Only the heter you're left with is called mati l'siluke. The hotel owner can move you out of your room into another room. According to many authorities, that's the equivalent of being able to move you out and totally. Toast as an Erevin, that's at least one criterion for enabling people to carry without an Eruv. Because the people who are there are not full independent owners. They're either not owners sufficiently or they're considered secondary to the real owner. And that brings me to the conundrum. Because even if you assume that much of Saluke works, if it works, not because they're not considered a resident at all, they're just too temporary, which is what some say. But if you say that they're considered secondary to the real owner, take a look in Mishnah Berurah Siman Shin Ayin Sifkaton Lamed Gimel Bialochas Sif Gimel Dimasul Einam. They talk about it. Chazanish is not happy with this. Look in the Dershu footnote 28. Some say that even according to the more lenient view, which seems to be espoused by the Mishnah Brura, that's only if there's a Jewish owner of the hotel who lives in the hotel. Then we can consider everybody else's residence to be secondary to his. But if he doesn't live in the hotel, as most owners don't, then it's a serious problem. Others say, if you look at the Sefer Nesivos Shabbos, Rabbi Bloy from Yerushalayim, suggests you don't have to have the top cheese, the owner of the hotel, living in the hotel, which is, I believe, rare. Any representative would suffice. That would make it much easier if you accept that notion, and that would be the way to handle it. Of course, not everyone agrees to this assumption, but the meaning, I believe, is to be lenient based on assumption number one, which is found in the Sefer Chelkos Yaakov, in the last generation, and adding the Svarov of Moshe Feinstein, Nigros Moshe, where he says there's b'chlal no problem in hotels, because every room has furniture which belongs to the landlord, the beds, the sink, and everything, the drawers, the works. So the problem is that Rov Poskim argued with Moshe that this cool of Tfisas Yad does not apply if the items are put in the room for the benefit of the person who's renting the room, which is exactly the case in all the things we just described. But Rav Moshe is certainly an Adam Golem Ma'ot, doesn't need my Haskama. The Chelkos Yaakov was a great rabbi, a contemporary of Rav Moshe's, and he lived in Switzerland, I believe, and they both had said Smutah for totally different reasons. So the minig is to be Mekel, Halacha Gadibri Ha-Mekel Be'eruv. Someone wants to be Machmir, Tavol Abracha, because I say the majority view is not to rely on either of these two leniencies, based upon the text. I can't go into it right now. So we can say Machmir, Tavol Abracha. So if it's an ongoing hotel that has business all year long, for the first week of the season, assuming it's one of those seasonal ones, they should make an Erev Chatzeris and for the whole year, include everybody's going to be coming for the whole year. That's what I would recommend. But if it can't be done, last minute, this is typical of the hotels, they come to the last minute. Hopefully not after the last minute. Sometimes, Chas V'Shalom. So then there is the room to be makel. It seems to be the prevailing minute here. Question number 24. My wife overslept on Shabbos morning and missed Shachris. We have the Chatzos. How does she properly do Tashlumin? Or the proper order of Tfilas and Nusach of the Shemoneh Esrei. B, if she would have woken up shortly before Chatzos, should she just daven then the Shemoneh Esrei, or is there some minimal Tfilas that she must be able to daven before Chatzos? Would we say that if she started Pesukah the Zimra or Kriya Shema or Shemoneh Esrei before Chatzos, she can continue and finish davening after and not wait till Tashlumin? All good questions. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuv Vov in Aruch Chaim, Siv Beis, women are potter from Shemoneh Esrei. The Mogen Avraham writes there in Sifkotin Beis. They're potter from Shemoneh Esrei. The mitzvah says she's man groma. But she's chayev according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. In the Chiyuv Doraisa, the Torah obligation to daven once a day, anytime you want. Anytime you want, you can daven. There's nothing wrong. The tefillah should have a shevach bakosha and odo, which both brachos have, or a series of brachos. There's nothing wrong with, from the perspective of the Torah itself, the Doraisa. We're doing it in the afternoon. So if you overslept, say those brachas in the afternoon. That's what I think is the proper opinion. I don't believe Tashlumin is appropriate because she may not have been chayiv in the first place. You know, the Tashlumin, for something which she had no obligation in the first place. If you take a look in the Piskei Tshuvos, Siman Kuf Vav, footnote 32, he says that most authorities say in a similar case, a woman forgot Yalav Yom Rosh Chodesh. Forgot. So a man who forgot has to repeat Shemoneh Esrei. She doesn't according to these authorities. She's never chayiv in that. These cases are somewhat similar, not identical. But I think it's a fairly good precedent for it. It's against the Rav Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman writes in Hilchos Shlomo Tefillah, Perek Gimel, Siv Ches, based upon the Mishnah Berurah Siman Reish Tam Gimel Sifkot Mem Gimel, that if you miss the time, you have to make Tashluma later on. He's working with an assumption that the Mishnah Berurah did not distinguish in that passage between those women who say Shemona at you all the time and those who don't. But one could deflect that, because the Mishnah Berurah Lishitoso and Siman Kuvav hold that women do have to daven two Shemona Esrei a day. That's why over here, the case he's describing, Hilchos Shabbos, he doesn't say anything about that. He's assuming they will daven twice a day Shemona Esrei, as he passes himself in Siman Kuvav. But for those who don't, and that's the majority of women, certainly in the olden days, so then one can argue that, very nice, you're davening. You daven Shemona Esrei once a day or twice a day, but it's not an absolute chiyuv on you. And therefore, if you forgot Yal HaViyav, you don't have to go back. And if you overstep, you also don't have to go back. That would be my p'sak la'alocha, savik brachos l'hokel. That's how it seems to me. If you wake up before Chatzos, the first thing to do is Shemona Esrei. Because that's what time runs out of Chatzos, b'pashtus. Say Shemona Esrei, everything else will you do later on. If you have a little more time, the whole discussion is in the Shulchan Aruch, what to do. It's brachas, and then it's brach shem asher yishtabach. You know, skip in the middle. It all depends on the circumstance, how much time is left. But it's only if you start Shemona Esrei before Chatzos, you can't finish. That could be. Take a nice long Shemona Esrei, you can start before and after. That's the machloikas, I think, which depends upon the machloikas in Hilchos Mincha. In Hilchos Mincha, the Goanim say if you start before Shkia and go past Shkia, it's okay. And there were those who say that the Mincha can always be started after the Shkia. So it's a minority view in today's world, but it still exists. Here, too, you went past Chatzos. You know, if you look on the Eliyahu Rabbah, in two places, Siman Ayin Aleph, Sifkotin Aleph, and Siman Peites Sifkotin Gimel, you get an impression that you can daven Shachas until Mincha Gedolah, for the half an hour relative hours after Chatzos. Hard to fully understand why, but that's what it seems to be saying. So there's a combination of leniencies over here, which could be relied upon to say the Shemona Esrei in that half hour right after Chatzos. But I don't want to rely on that. I'd say it's much better to do is to get it in before Chatzos. But even if you start it before Chatzos, and you go past Chatzos, aside from the opinion of the lenient view, that you can even start then a half an hour after Chatzos, which some posts can say. Aside from that, once you start, according to many authorities based on Yerushalmi, you can finish even though the time ran out. That's up sock when it comes to the Mincha situation. But that's only if you start Shemona Esrei. The fact that you started other things of the davening, that has no relevance. You start Stukud Zimra, start Krishma, has no relevance. Obviously the question, Nura knows what he's talking about. And the answer is yes, that works for Shemona Esrei, but not for anything else. Question 25, the last question. People used to enter my shul from a door next to the Aron Kodesh at the front, and then leave through the back door to the lobby / room for the Kiddush, then through the door to the outside. The mezuzah was placed on the right-hand side as we leave the shul, entering into the lobby. However, now people enter through the back door and come into the shul from the lobby. The front door has been designated as an emergency exit, but a couple of people with the key still enter through it. The mezuzah is now on the left as we enter the shul from the lobby. Should we switch it over to the right-hand side? Does the fact that it's a shul and may not need a mezuzah make a difference? Absolutely makes a difference. My shul has no mezuzahs. I don't put any mezuzahs on the sanctuary in the shul, so people should ask the question. I tell them the answer. This is not a dining room. Ideally, it's not a bedroom either. You shouldn't fall asleep in the middle of davening, which some people sadly do, or in the middle of the rabbi's speech, some people sadly do. It's not right to fall asleep in shul. Beis Medrash is different, but a shul not. So that's why there's no mezuzah in my shul at all, in either direction, either entrance. There's none. That's true of the shul proper, what they call today the sanctuary. But the remaining part of the shul is used for all kinds of things and does require a mezuzah. So therefore, in the particular case at hand, I would say as follows. If they don't eat in the shul, you're putter completely. And therefore, you don't need a mezuzah, not at the door which enters the shul from the back, and not the door enters the shul from the front, putter completely. If the people do eat there, then it's a problem. Leave the mezuzah where it is. Leave it where it is. Leave it. Leave it. Which one should you leave? The one which goes from the street into the shul, from the way it was now called the emergency door. That should be left. But the one which goes from the lobby to the shul should be number one switched at the present time. And number two, I would say that care should be taken to explain to people why you did it. If I had my druthers, I would tell people not to eat in the shul, and have no mezuzah on the doorway to the shul. Become a conversation piece. Be able to get your message home in a better fashion. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, we thank you very much. We thank the Rabban for being on the call. Bezrat Hashem will be on again for March 29th. We look forward to it. And again, we thank you. Take care, everyone.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.